Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire News Group podcast hosted by the legal journalism team, half of which is pretty sure she's mastered the art of bolognese sauce, but needs the other Italian half to make sure that it's up to snuff. I'm Rewire News Group senior editor of law and policy, Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piccolo, Rewire News Group's executive editor. Rewire News Group is the one and only home for expert repro journalism that inspires you to catch some fall vibes. And the Boom Lawyered podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So we have got some really exciting stuff going on over at rewirednewsgroup.com, and mm-hmm. you should check it out. First of all, we've got this really, really great piece from Julia Metro and Catherine Lee about Greek life and the pandemic and the ways in which there are still frat parties going on and there are people who are immunocompromised, students uh-huh. with disabilities, who are going to be harmed by the fact that schools aren't taking the necessary precautions to, I don't know, make sure that the jello shots people are doing at Sigma Chi Beta Phi Pau are hygienic.
I mean, we live in a college town. Maybe we could just, like, I don't know.
Let's
take a
go
beat?
Crash some college frat parties, Jess.
Oh, this is amazing. That was not the direction I anticipated this to go, but
it'll be like old school. Remember that movie Old School?
We got a really nice weekend lined up. A little Bed Bath and Beyond.
I don't know if we'll have time.
Oh, boy.
So that piece is amazing. And we also have a really powerful piece from our legal fellow, Caroline Riley, about the Brittany Poulaw case. This mm-hmm. is the Native American woman who was sentenced to jail for having a miscarriage. And during her trial, there was no evidence that the fact that she was using narcotics, she mm-hmm. was using crystal methamphetamines, I believe, and marijuana. There was no evidence that her drug usage contributed to the miscarriage. So mm-hmm. we are very quickly sliding into a world where every miscarriage is going to warrant a police investigation. And that's something we should all be very, very concerned about. And finally, I want to point out that things are moving so quickly when it comes to the Texas lawsuit, right? SB 8. Mm-hmm. And so we at Rewire News Group had the genius idea to make a special report page for all things Texas SB 8. So you can go to rewirenewsgroup.com/Texas Abortion Ban, one word. And all of our coverage is there. Yep. If you want to get into it, we will help you get there. Whew, it's exciting stuff. It's exciting stuff. But Jess, can I ask you a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Have you seen our Twitter feed lately?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I mean, we've got a new social media manager named Anaga Srikanth, and she is amazing. Anaga yes. is amazing. Like, there's really no. The other day, she tweeted something in the morning about whether or not this was going to be a bones or no bones day for
abortion
rights. I spit
my coffee.
I snorted so loud. First of all, because I'm 47 years old and I'm very excited I understood the reference.
Okay, but I had to look it up, not going to lie.
Okay, so did I. But I love that we've got this amazing, spicy new social media manager who's connecting with the youths.
Yeah.
Because you and I, we're not the youths anymore.
No.
So we got to rely on cool cats like Anaga to connect us to the youths. And also, I would like to shout out another person, one of our followers, one of our Boom Lawyered listeners, a bona fide law nerd, Asha Daya. She tweeted, okay, just caught up on the latest Boom Lawyered episode. And of course, the fucking Federalist Society held a fucking event about SBH, which included some of the various judges who have ruled in its favor the past month or so. Angry face.
Angry face is the best.
Angry face is the best. And they're absolutely correct. Yeah. You know what I mean? It is unconscionable that judges, Clarence Thomas, Sam Alito, they're having these events at the Federalist Society where they're complaining about the fact that the American people aren't too keen on what they're doing in the courts and the fact that the court is super partisan. So shout out to Asha for shouting us out and for making that connection, because it's absolutely messed up.
So, Imani, yes. I got to talk to you about something.
What did I do?
So we're friends. We've been through this for a while. So, you know, I understand that, look, the rolling into the end of the year is going to be kind of a sprint. And so we all need to do what we can to take care of ourselves. But yeah. You took last week off.
I did. My parents were in town.
Your parents were in town, and that was really good, and I wanted you to have that time. Yeah, it's so important. Yeah. But.
No, what did I do?
I got to talk about this court energy that you and I are bringing when we take some time off. First of all, maybe I owe you an apology. Maybe I should say I'm sorry for transferring my bad court luck to you.
Yeah.
So that when you try to take time off, shit goes sideways because...
It really does. It's not usually me. It's usually you. It's usually you on a plane or you picking up your daughter from school or something always... You on a trail. Something always happens when you're not extremely online. Last week, I wasn't extremely online and...
Imani wasn't extremely online and... What happened? We got a Department of Justice petition to the Supreme Court, and an order to expedite consideration of abortion providers' challenges to SB 8, they got granted. Yikes. It could put the court on a course to basically end legal abortion in like a hot minute.
And a hot minute being like a week from now.
I mean.
Oh, God. I mean, it's just so much worse than you and I ever expected, really. It's just so much worse because the challenge is teed up in a way that it's going to get misconstrued as some kind of sarcastic quotes compromise or dramatically sarcastic quotes moderation on abortion rights. And that's what we're going to dive into in this episode. It's just going to be the one topic, and that one topic is going to be how the conservatives on the court could use Dobbs, the Mississippi case, and the Texas case on SB 8 to deliver a 1-2 knockout punch to Roe. That's it. Just the one topic, because it's a doozy. So put on your protective eyewear, strap in. Whew.
I got to go get a coffee.
I got to go get a drink.
All right, Imani. So here's a fun thing that wasn't on my bingo card for 2021. Multiple abortion rights challenges at the Supreme Court all at once?
What's happening?
What's the center here?
I need an adult. I need help. Can you help me?
That's what just happened thanks to Texas. All right. Let's walk through this because literally it's a ride. All right. So last episode, you and I explained how basically the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is the reason we can't ever have nice things when it comes to abortion.
That's right. And I'm not going to rehash it all because it's complicated and confusing and Jess nearly stroked out because of all the civil procedure. And I don't want her brain to explode because I need her brain over the next several years, actually for the rest of my life because she's like my favorite. But as that aside, so the Fifth Circuit blocked this amazing order that Judge Pittman wrote, this 113 just work of art, right?
This opus.
It was an opus.
I mean, we praised it ad infinitum last episode.
I hailed it as my God King. Like,
you
this
did.
113-page order is now my religion. I have an altar and I pray to it in the morning.
Do you remember how excited I got about findings of fact?
Yes, you did.
Oh my God.
You went off about findings of fact.
I like strapped in for that.
But it was important because even though the Fifth Circuit just shanked, you know, Pittman's order, the fact that it held so many key findings of fact matters
right.
as this case winds its way to the Supreme Court like tomorrow.
The gender neutral language.
Oh, I love that. I've been yelling so much about using gender inclusive language and to see this judge say, yeah, you know what? I get it. It's not just women who get pregnant. It's not just women who need abortion. Bing, bang, boom. It's not a big deal. It was so nice to see that. It was so nice to see that.
I like this, like, reminiscing because it was so fun to talk about.
It was
about
a week and a half ago.
So much has happened. So much. That was our last episode. And oh my God, so much has happened in this case. To begin with, as Imani has alluded to, it's now scheduled for oral arguments next week, people. Next week. At the Supreme Court.
Like, we're not saying next week as in a like, oh yeah, time's a flat circle. Next year.
No, literally
7 days from today.
TikTok, motherfucker, TikTok.
And so, you know, I just need to point out that it remains an absolute stain on the Supreme Court that SB 8 is in effect. Oh. And it just can't be said enough, right? But the good news is that the Biden administration is all over it like, I don't know, brown on rice, white on rice, basmati on rice, whatever kind of rice you eat. The DOJ was basically like, screw this. We're skipping the Fifth Circuit and going straight to the Supreme Court because the Fifth Circuit is full of BS. Like they're just, I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know. I can't explain it. Maybe they're all high. Maybe they're all smoking something we all should be smoking and they're not sharing. But there's something going on with the Fifth Circuit, and the Biden DOJ was like, nah, son, we're going straight to the Supreme Court, which frankly isn't much better, is it?
I mean, no, but thank you, because I totally buried the lead there when I was talking about what happened. Not only did the court take these cases, they were like, yeah, we're going to take the cases. Not going to block SB 8 while we think about it, though. So yeah, SB 8 remains in effect. So since our last episode, the Biden administration filed this request to the Supreme Court to step into the fight over SB 8. And last Friday, they did, granting two different petitions related to SB 8, but refusing to block the law in the meantime. What the ever-loving hell is going on?
It's your own precedent, man. Like,
can I get that on a t-shirt? It's your own precedent, man.
That's just what I don't understand. Like, I understand that they don't like abortion. Yeah. I understand that they're champing at the bit to just kill abortion. But just at a fundamental level, like how the court works, it's your precedent. You have to uphold it until you overturn it.
Good grief.
Right? You can't just like sneaky sideways overturn it in a shadow docket. It's just such a disaster. But can we just talk about Sonia Sotomayor?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's.
Okay. Because Sonia Sotomayor is yet again one of the only justice, actually.
Truly the only one.
The only one who is connecting the court's rulings to real world results, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like she wrote this dissent that was basically like, I cannot even express to you how fucked up it is that this law is still in effect. She didn't use those words. But I mean, that was the undercurrent, because there was just this sort of simmering rage about, yeah, this is great. I'm glad we took this case. But seriously, why are we not blocking this law? Why are we not maintaining the status quo? The status quo is 50 years of freaking precedent.
Right.
But she does this. This is what she does, right? She did it in that Fourth Amendment case. You remember Utah v. Strife?
Yep.
Which was called the Black Lives Matter Manifesto, where she quoted Ta-Nehisi Coates and Michelle Alexander and really talked about the indignity that people of color face at the hands of police, right? I mean, it's a really critical connection to draw. She did the same thing on the Ohio voting rights case,
yep.
Right? When she explained what it meant that Ohio was just dumping voters off the voter rolls willy-nilly. I mean, these are academic conversations that a lot of justices like to have in these sort of silos without connecting them to real-world results, real-world consequences. And not to put too fine a point on it, pregos in Texas need a Bobo's right now.
They do, right now.
Right? Can we put that on a shirt? Pregos in Texas need a Bobo's. They need them right now. And they're not able to get them right now, and they're being turned away. So every day that the Supreme Court lets this law remain in effect, and to be clear, they are letting it remain in effect because it is within their power to stop this.
Yep.
Every day they don't, they are spitting in the face of their own precedent. And quite frankly, they're disrespecting my girl, Sonia.
Right?
And I don't like it.
And I think, you know, in this case in particular, not that it's different in the others, but this case, especially connecting the real world dots, is so important, I think, because it was a bunch of like white cis dudes in bow ties coming up with like, let's be super clever on civil procedure as a way to try and, you know, trick the courts out of allowing people to exercise fundamental human and constitutional rights. So absolutely connecting the real world consequences is so important. All right, listeners, here's what's happening with this case and on this timeline. It is quick, so hold on to your butts.
Truly.
On November 1st, 7 days, a week from today, my daughter's birthday. So much is happening.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Olive. My gut row. The Supreme Court.
Oh,
it's
no.
So grim.
That would be terrible if your daughter's birthday is also known as the day that the court, like, no. No, it's just arguments. It's just arguments.
It's just arguments.
Argument.
So, okay. So, November 1st, the Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments in two cases, right? A pair of challenges. The provider's challenges and the Biden administration's challenges. Two cases in one day, back to back. The arguments are going to be live streamed. Imani and I are going to be doing, I'm already finger guns. I'm this excited for the arguments. I'm already finger guns. Imani and I will be covering them live. We'll have a reaction podcast for y'all afterwards because you know we're going to have thoughts. All right. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening a week from today. Let's talk about what the court is going to actually consider, right? Both challenges are what we in the biz like to call
in the biz
threshold challenges, right? Threshold challenges are sort of preliminary questions. In the case brought by the Biden administration, the court's going to consider whether the federal government has standing, right? We talk about standing in this case or in this podcast all the time, whether they have standing or the right to sue even to in federal court to block enforcement.
And then in the case brought by the abortion providers, the court is going to take a look at SB8's private enforcement structure, right? This is that weird enforcement mechanism that Texas Republicans crafted in order to essentially evade judicial review and evade an injunction. This enforcement mechanism deputizes private individuals to bring lawsuits against doctors, clinics, healthcare providers, anyone else who aids or abets an abortion.
Yep. So that's what the court's going to look at. And I know I just said that these are threshold questions, but that did not stop the state of Texas in its briefs in both of these cases from arguing that the court could just go ahead and use these cases now to overturn Roe and Casey instead of waiting a month or so to do it in Dobbs. So even though it's a threshold challenge, the state of Texas is absolutely treating this as a direct challenge to Roe and Casey.
And frankly, who's going to stop them? The Supreme Court?
Truly, who's going to stop them?
Who's going to stop them from making these arguments? Who's going to stop the Supreme Court from being like, yeah, I know these were only, we were only supposed to look at these two issues, but let's just go ahead and just rip all the intestines out of Roe v. Wade right now. Why wait until next June, right? Why even wait until the Mississippi case? We'll go ahead and we'll gut Roe and Casey.
Yeah.
And then in Dobbs, we'll come up with some other reason. Maybe we'll come up with a new standard, or maybe we'll say, oh, we'll go back to the quickening, you know, standard of yesteryear, the days of yore. The point is that this has accelerated so quickly. It's just shocking, right? A direct challenge to Roe and Casey being heard 7 days from now.
I mean, and again, you know, all teed up as a procedural fight over whether this law can be challenged, and if so, how. Not even the meat and potatoes of, like, a six-week ban in Texas.
You know what this is?
Yeah.
This is like those people when you do panels and they stand up and they're like, this is more of a comment than a question.
Texas has more of a comment than a question when it comes to abortion.
Honestly, it's like, okay, yeah, I know you want us to talk about civil procedure, but can we just really talk? I would like to have to make some statements about how I don't like Roe and Casey.
I feel like I went to law school with a lot of these folks.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look, not going to lie, I was a little bit of a gunner in law school. I can drag myself for that. But however, I at least stayed on topic. I wasn't filing briefs about a private enforcement mechanism that was like, yeah, 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 but what if we just went for it, guys? What
just
if we just
do
went
it.
For it? Do it.
Do
let's
it.
Do it. Let's
Leroy
do it.
Leroy Jenkins.
Yeah. So it's unprecedented times, folks. Like, what if Sam Alito just takes them up on the offer? Like, who knows?
Like, what are the options here? What do we do?
Go hide out in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah, we can do that. I went there a bunch last week on the vacation that I took that apparently prompted this whole fucking mess. It's gorgeous up there. Let's go. I'm ready.
So let's go to Rocky Mountain National Park.
But seriously, like, what's going to happen?
Okay, so everything about SB8, this situation is unusual and stressful. I think this is my third shirt of the morning. I've sweat through just trying to get it. Like, let's talk about the refusal to block the law while the challenges go on. That's unusual, right? Granting an order to hear the cases literally a few hot minutes after the Department of Justice filed its reply brief in one of the cases with a Sotomayor dissent teed up. I don't even know what that's about.
Maybe she's pre-writing dissents. Like,
I mean, smart, if so. Good use of your time.
She should take every single case that's on the dock and just start being like, what are these jackasses going to say? All right. I mean, I bet she could easily pre-write her dissents and barely have to change anything.
They're functionally Mad Libs at this point.
They're functionally Mad Libs, like, that are being filled out by functional ding-dongs.
Rage lips. All right. So, yeah, all of that. And to make matters even more bonkers, the court could rule real soon on these requests. So according to advocates in the case, a decision in these cases could come within days or even weeks of arguments. Like, what? I don't know. I'm stammering here. We're going to have arguments on a Monday and an opinion on a Friday. I don't know what this world is, Imani. It doesn't make any sense to me.
If it doesn't make any sense to you, it sure as shit doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, are you telling me that literally they could hear arguments on Monday and by Friday, Roe and Casey could be gutted?
Advocates said that is a possibility. Like, we are so far off the tracks here. There's no requirement that the court rule quickly, so they could also hear arguments, continue to let SB 8 take effect, and think about it for a long time.
Which is also terrible, because then, you know, in a year from now, people, anti-abortion advocates will say, SB 8's been in effect for a year, and look, it's not that big of a deal, and they'll find some way to make it seem like the fact that scores of pregnant people in Texas are going all over the country and out of the country in order to get abortion care.
Yeah.
They'll spin that as NBD.
Yeah, no big deal. Hey, it's not that bad, guys. So literally after November 1st, we just wait. And I think it's a good opportunity for us to reflect that while we are going to be anxious waiting for an outcome, imagine if you were a pregnant person in the state of Texas trying to access abortion care, what your wait feels like at that time. We're waiting for the court's conservatives to show their asses here. We're not actually trying to access healthcare. So that's something that really just like every time we get in this moment settles in. But so what are the actual possible outcomes? Like legally, what could happen here? Well, they could strike Roe and Casey, and then Dobbs in some ways becomes moot functionally. Like, that's just a, you know, let's talk about 15 weeks.
And so what happens then is that all of whatever states have trigger bans go into effect. So that's what, 11 states?
Yeah.
Trigger bans. And then there are other states. Well, I guess the same states have trigger bans also have personhood, because Alabama's got a personhood amendment that's just ready to kick in.
Yep. We're looking at 20 plus states where abortion, if Roe and Casey were to be overturned outright, it would be either immediately recriminalized at the state level or zombie, what we call sort of zombie statutes that get reanimated and enforced.
So we're looking at half the states having no abortion access, throwing the entire country in chaos, creating a healthcare crisis that's even more grave than the one that exists right now.
Yeah.
That means people that are in states that are hostile to abortion will have to start traveling to states that are not so hostile to abortion. And you can bet your bottom dollar that Republicans and conservatives have their eyes on the states that are not hostile to abortion to make them hostile to abortion.
So that's a nightmare scenario. That's the like end of days scenario in this case. So here's something that sounds awful also. Not that that was like not awful, but like here's a slightly order of awfulness of a different magnitude. The court could split the differences in these cases, right?
No.
The court could, for example, find that the Biden administration, the federal government can't sue, right? Like that is a long-term strategy to say that the federal government can't proactively come in and defend the constitutional rights of state citizens.
What?
Right? So like that is, so they could say in one breath, say that and then say, but you know what? The enforcement provision that's causing chaos for providers, that's just a bridge too far. So we're going to strike that.
Yeah.
Individual lawsuits for everyone. Oprah for a Bobo. This is so bad. I don't even like, okay, we've established that I do not like civil procedure, but I don't even know how to like make these points in my head make sense.
Well, here's what I think is going to happen.
Uh-oh.
I think that we're going to get a situation, assuming that the court doesn't kill Roe at the end of the week, and that we actually do have until next June.
Yeah.
I think the court is going to say, okay, the six-week bans are a bit much, because most people don't know they're pregnant, and a lot of people, once more people realize how absurd those six-week bans are, they're going to become more disfavored, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the court can say, six-week bans are a bridge too far. 15-week bans, that's not so bad. You can still get an abortion in your first trimester. So let's say 6 week bad, 15-week okay. And this enforcement mechanism, you guys, it's bonkers, right? We can't do that because the court knows that there are other states waiting in the wings to try the same shit with more favored constitutional mm-hmm. rights like gun rights and whatnot.
Yeah.
So they're going to want to nip that in the bud. And I also don't think the court is going to want to sign into some twisted version of federalism where the federal government doesn't have the capacity to defend the Constitution. That seems real weird. So they can say, we're going to nix the enforcement mechanism. We're going to nix the 6-week ban, but we're going to say the 15-week ban is okay. And isn't that wonderful? And do you know what's going to happen? Every cis white dude who writes for the New York Times is going to publish something that says, liberals were so stressed out about how this was going to be the end of Roe. And really, it wasn't the end of Roe because you can still get an abortion in your first trimester. So, you know, checkmate snowflake libs or what have you. And I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose my mind.
I'm already preemptively calling this the great abortion compromise of 2021, right? Like, I'm imagining the, like, you know, in the historical artifacts, it's like, no, the Supreme Court conservatives crafted a compromise on abortion rights. And then there's going to be a lot of legal commentators who are going to say that because everybody is unhappy, that's how we know it's a good compromise.
Oh my God.
And I'm going to say, you need to take a seat because we don't compromise on fundamental human rights. And a compromise in this case is fundamentally a reversal of Roe and Casey, which is why it's a coward's compromise. And that's what I'm calling it, and that's what we need to call it. We cannot let the court reverse Roe and Casey and then say that they didn't do it.
Right.
Letting Mississippi's 15-week ban take effect, letting Texas's 6-week ban take effect, that is spitting in the face of abortion rights precedent. That is a reversal. And they can run away from it. They can say, no, it's a compromise. It's not that bad. But we have to call it for what it is. If you can't get an abortion before viability because the Supreme Court has let SB 8 take effect, then they effectively reversed Roe and Casey. And they're just kind of getting around to doing it later. In fact, they're hoping you don't notice is what's going on.
They're hoping you don't notice. Exactly. They're chicken shit is what they are. They're being chicken shit. If you want to reverse Roe, then come out and reverse Roe. You've been trying for 50 years to reverse Roe.
Yep.
Freaking do it. And then say it with your goddamn chest.
Yep.
But do not try and gaslight me into thinking that, oh, a 15-week ban isn't really that bad. No, I'm not taking it. I'm not going to hear it. Roe versus Wade won't even make it till its 50th birthday. It's cut down in the prime of its life. You are not going to convince me that there's a compromise. And I do want to repeat what you said. You do not compromise on fundamental human rights. That's something we don't do. I will not even entertain it. If I see anyone talking about a compromise, I swear to God, I'm coming over there.
Yep.
I'm coming to your house and I'm knocking on your door.
Have the courage of your convictions, Justice Sam Alito. Do it in the daylight.
That's right. Do it in the daylight, Sam. And even though that sounds kind of porny, we're going to end the show. We're going to end the show on that note. It's not going to get any better from there. If you'd like to talk to us about the coward's compromise or the great abortion compromise of 2021, you can find me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can find Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. You can follow us on Facebook, our Facebook group, Instagram, Twitter, Rewire News Group. Please follow us. We are bringing you all of the hits. You can and should subscribe to Jess's newsletter, The Fallout. It is amazing. It's Jess's brain in your inbox every week. RewireNewsGroup.com/The Fallout. It's very exciting stuff, right?
So exciting.
What are we going to do, Jess?
We're going to see you on the tubes, folks.
See you on the tubes. See you next Monday for live tweeting these arguments.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piglow and Imani Gandhi. Mark Folletti produces the show.